This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue-collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue-collar workers for blue-collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Where's Fielder?
He's gone to the dogs.
Got a little toe-tapping music for you this morning. Levon Helm, drummer and vocalist for the band. Why would I be playing music by Levon Helm on the Gone to the Dogs podcast, you ask? Well, here we are in the latter part of September, almost going into October. And one more month, November, my buddy Nubbin Moore and I'll be heading out to the White River in Arkansas. And to make the connection to Levon, Levon was born in Elaine, Arkansas, which is just south of St. Charles, where we usually stay. Levon, of course, was very, very popular for a lot of songs. the night they drove old Dixie down, being one of them. But anyway, Levon was born in Elaine, Arkansas, May 26th of 1940, and regretfully passed away on April 19th, 2012. I just love that good old Southern beat, those drums and all. Wake you boys up out there that are heading to work here on this Monday morning. No matter when you're listening, that's good stuff right there. Well, I wanted to just fly one solo here with you this week, and we're getting into the hunting seasons here pretty quick. Within a couple of weeks in most parts of the country, it'll be coon season. And, you know, I'm always reminded of around October 15th there in my home state of West Virginia, when I began to oil my guns and get out my boots. And as my dad would do, he would get out that mason jar of rendered bear fat, which he called bear grease, and would grease his hunting boots, and I would do the same. We mostly wore leather boots to hunt back in those days in the mountains. But the smells of bear grease and gunpowder and wet hounds and all fallen leaves, and man, oh man, October, the time of the year for the hunter. There's none better, for sure. My wife and I just returned from a trip, a quick trip, really, up to Richmond, Indiana. Now, Nubbin and I had been up to Richmond just about 3 weeks prior for Autumn Oaks, and we talked about that in the last episode. But this year, this time, we decided, based on our experience in getting a companion dog, about December will be 4 years ago, I went up to Richmond and purchased a dachshund puppy from the president of the Wayne County Coon Hunters, Tyler Stroh. Tyler has black and tan coon hounds, but he also has dachshunds. My wife had a dachshund years ago and wanted another one. We felt it was time for us to have a dog like that at home, and so we went and got our Louie. And Louie turned out to be a great dog. And I guess when you get older and you sit around and you talk about things, you talk too much. But I asked Ella here recently, I said, do you think you'd like to have another dachshund? What was I thinking, right? But anyway, we talked about it, and lo and behold, Tyler had a litter available, and they were out of the same sire. His male named Jack. He's a black and tan. And we found out that there was a female puppy available, a black and tan short hair that is expected to be a true miniature dachshund, which I think her mother weighed about 9 pounds and her daddy about 11. But anyway, we boarded an Allegiant airline 737 at 9 o'clock on Monday morning. I believe that was the 22nd of September, and flew up to Dayton, Ohio. Now, this was tracing the blueprint or the footprint of the trip I took to get Louie. Flew into Dayton, rented a car, drove over to Richmond, stayed in the same hotel that Nubbin and I stayed in. Went out and picked up the puppy at about 3 o'clock on Monday afternoon, got them situated back at the hotel, and I went out to the Wayne County Coon Hunters Association clubhouse just out west of Richmond there, and had a great evening with some of the club members. Man, they fed me. Anytime somebody will feed me, man, I'm going to be there. if I possibly can. But anyway, got to the club and had some great pulled pork and baked beans, all the trimmings, all the sides, and just had a great evening of fellowship and conversation with those folks out there. And I wanted to just briefly mention the folks that I talked with out there. They were such a great group. Ron Hoffman. These were all members of the Wayne County Coon Hunters. Now, before I mention these folks, I want to say that, you know, we brought Autumn Oaks to Richmond, Indiana in 1992. And I compiled a complete listing of all the locations of Autumn Oaks down through the years. And I'm going to buzz through that real quick right here for you. The event started at Greencastle, Indiana, in 1960 and ran there for 2 years. And then in 62, it went up to Kalamazoo, Michigan, then to Paducah, Kentucky in 63. Then it settled back in Greencastle in 1964 and remained there through 1978. Then it went up to the state of Michigan for 3 years in a row in the towns of Cassopolis, Centerville, and Coldwater. And then to Winston-Salem, North Carolina in 1982. And then the year that I came aboard as field operations manager at UKC in 1983, it went to Oak Harbor, Ohio. The entries weren't very good at Oak Harbor. That had been established before I came along, and I thought, man, this hunt needs to be back in Indiana. So with the 25th anniversary coming up, we moved it to Jasper. Jasper, Indiana was, and we were there for 3 years through 1986. I guess the options may have been lean. It could have been the great support that we received from Dwayne and Kitty Bruff and that whole group at Oak Harbor, Ohio. But we went back up there in 88 and 87. Got those backwards. Yearning to get back to Indiana again, we went to Logansport in 89, 90, and 91. And then, as I mentioned earlier, 1992, went to Richmond, Indiana. That was our first year there. And that hunt has remained there through this recent 2025 hunt, which marked 33 years at Richmond. 2025 was the 65th anniversary of Autumn Oaks. And I had to look back, and I was just 46 years old when we came to Richmond in 1992, had been with UKC for 10 years at that point. But at any rate, we did go by when the event came to Richmond. The club there, the Wayne County Coon Hunters, expressed their reasons for wanting to host Autumn Oaks was to build a clubhouse. They didn't have a clubhouse. They wanted to, or at least one that they were satisfied with, and they wanted to build a new one. And Dick Warville was the guy that I worked with. Alan Wetzel, Chet McCreary was there. Several of the people that I talked to just this week were there as well. And this is the list of people that I mentioned. Ron Hoffman was there, Richard Oakley, and Troy Johnson. Now, here's a couple of guys that are in their 80s. And I learned that these two have been friends, best friends, for more than 80 years. And Richard Oakley, they call him Oak, and Troy Johnson. Isn't that amazing to be able to have a friend for that many years? And now, several of my friends are in that age group, as am I, but, you know, I haven't known them all that many years. But anyway, Richard Oakley and Troy Johnson were there, and I mentioned Chet McCreary. See Chet every year at Automokes. He guides a cast, I think several casts during the week. Tyler Stroh is the president now, and I mentioned Tyler as being the breeder of the dachshunds that we like. But anyway, Tyler and his girlfriend, Morgan Middendorf, I knew I'd mess that up, Morgan. I apologize. Were there, and as well as Greg Hartwell. Megan Murray, another lady member, enjoyed talking to Megan about her military service. She served in the Army, and that was pretty interesting since our granddaughter Alyssa is serving that way as well. But anyway, just had a great time out there at the Wayne County Coon Hunters. Seriously, one of the largest coon hunting clubs that I've ever seen. They bought a facility on 7 acres of ground that was formerly a horse barn, I believe. And then they added on to that facility. They have a very modern kitchen. They have put in showers in the clubhouse. They have a large area for the hunters to meet and to call the cast and to do the bench shows indoors. Just a great facility just on the outskirts of Richmond. I went west on I-70 out there and turned, I believe it's on Highway 1. I don't want to mess that up. But anyway, just saw an announcement on the UKC page that they're having UKC events this weekend that I'm recording. Anyway, just a great time that I had out there. So anyway, the conversation went on, and we swapped stories up until almost 10 o'clock. And I headed back to Richmond, and Ella and I got up bright and early on Tuesday morning, got ourselves into the rental car and headed south and drove for about 10 and a half hours and overnighted in Forsyth, Georgia, there on Interstate 75 south of Atlanta. And boy, that's a joy driving through Atlanta. oh, man, I tell you, you need a sharp stick. When you drive through Atlanta, get a real sharp one and poke yourself in the eye just to make things better, you know. it's that bad. But anyway, we got through Atlanta on 75, got down to Forsyth. Spent a fairly restful night, got our bodies recharged and headed home, and got back home here to Pasco County, Florida about 2:45 in the afternoon. So, and all that was good. Had to take the rental car back on Wednesday, what was that, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning, and picked up the car we left at the airport and called it a wrap. And the little dog we got is just a real cutie, smart and real active. She's going to keep these old people buzzing around here, I'm for sure. But anyway, that's pretty much the story of what I've been into lately. Was just kind of reminiscing back a little bit for this week, and we had such a tough week the week before with the death of Charlie Kirk and all that entailed, and just the feeling of sadness and remorse and all of the things that went with that. But this week, you know, with our trip behind us and looking forward to good things to come, and the UKC World Hunt is going on as I'm recording this podcast, and it was great to see my good buddy Randy Smith doing well with his little friend dog. She's in, got through the first night, and John Strickland with little Ann, which I think Randy's involved with her too, and she got through. And anyway, there's, as I record this, there are 27 dogs that won their cats on Thursday night, and they're going to draw out tonight. And so all the excitement of the World Championship is upon us. And that's always something I look forward to in the fall. As I look back, you know, it was 1978 when I said I do as a field rep for UKC, and that was the first year of the World Championship. So I don't know, I was going to add those years up from 1978 to 2025, however many that is. I only went about a mile to school, and that was to public school with that. So I'm not going to try to do that while I'm talking. Trying to multitask is not one of my best activities at my age. Well, anyway, the World Hunt, held many memories for me down through the years. And, I was with a UKC until 1998 when I joined PKC, and was there until 2004. Went to AKC and stayed there until I retired. And I believe 2012. Anyway, just had a great time always at the World Hunt. So many memories of the years that went by. Meeting, having a good time with my field reps was one of the things that I remember most, and all the fun and the jokes. And we had a crew over the years, man. When we'd get together, it was a fun time. And, you know, I say this, not to condemn anyone, and not to appear that, to be self-righteous or anything like that. But, you know, our parties and our fun times that we had around those events didn't involve alcohol at all. And I know some people think you have to have a drink, and I'm not here on behalf of the Women's Christian Temperance Union or any such. Although my mother was a member of that at one time. But anyway, we just had a good time. You know, a lot of joking, a lot of fun stuff, a lot of kidding back and forth. And man, I so many stories I could relate. As I was in Richmond, I looked on the wall there in the clubhouse of the Wayne County Coon Hunters, and there was just a multitude of plaques on the wall. And those were awarded to that club for hosting Autumn Oaks, 33 of them all together. And they had them all displayed really nicely in a little set-aside room there with some comfortable furniture and all, and just first class, really good. And I remember those days of having to get together the awards. You know, that was part of my job, and making sure that we leading up to the World Championship, that each of the clubs had their packet of plaques. We gave plaques back in that day to dogs that qualified for the World Championship. So trophy builders like Imperial Trophy in Fort Wayne, Indiana, really loved me because I spent a lot of money on awards back in those days. Anyhow, this time of year in October, it's one of those things where if you're going to really enjoy the hunting season, you need to have done your homework and getting your dogs ready, getting them physically fit. I talked to Mark Miller this week, and he's been preparing our fever dog for some hunts and some. He still loves to do the field trials and water races as he's building these wins on the way to Hall of Fame in these different categories. But he told me that he had swum the fever dog over 2,000 yards this week. Man, he said 800 yards there that one day. That's 8 football fields. Imagine swimming 8 football fields. But dogs have amazing stamina, but they need to be in shape, you know, just like we do. And that's been my problem in my latter years, is that I really just haven't exercised and walked and done as much in that regard as I should. And I'm paying for it right now because I don't have the strength in my legs and all that I used to. But I am doing some things to try to get ready for our annual trip to Arkansas. And before I go up there in the month of October, I'm sliding up to Katanning, Pennsylvania for a few nights. I think we got about a whole week planned up there with Randy Smith and those Lone Pine Trim Walkers. Now, Randy, you know, he drives me around in that Can-Am Coon Hunters Cadillac he's got there. And I enjoy that so very, very much. It's great when you get to be my age to have a friend, have friends, you know, like that. My buddies at the White River, they're looking after Nubbin and me more and more each year, it seems. But anyway, so I got a few things planned for the fall, Pennsylvania and then Arkansas. And I don't know if I'll get up to the mountains for a bear hunt with Heath Hyatt, my fellow podcaster here on the you know, W Hunting Supply Network. I was looking here, it just didn't actually begin this podcast like I intended to, but I wanted to kind of just slide into it by saying, you know, that this was episode, this one that you're listening to is episode 204, numerical for Gone to the Dogs with W, 204 podcasts to date. And if I add the 119 that I did prior to coming to W, I've done 323 podcasts. That's a lot. So anyway, no wonder my voice is shot. I just wanted to kind of talk to you a little bit, I guess, about these dogs and my philosophies on training and getting a dog ready for the woods and enjoying the dog in the woods and just, you know, the whole experience. And it's always kind of a chicken and egg thing when people say, well, you should never get a puppy. You should start with an older dog and then, you know, kind of learn how to coon hunt and then buy that well-bred puppy and train it with that older dog. And that's worked extremely well for people for many, many years. In fact, that's the way we trained our dogs when I was young coming up. You know, we'd have a dog that was, you know, running and treeing and leaving the trash alone, and a dog that we could depend on to go hunting with. And then, you know, as opportunities arose, we'd breed a female and raise a litter of puppies and keep one or two aside. And you know, that was the cycle. And that's the way most of the people did it in those days. I think that idea of training a young dog with an older dog may have diminished a little bit nowadays. I think as soon as a pup has started, by that we mean he's, you know, running track or he started to tree a little or whatever, that we like to solo them out. We like to let them learn on their own, figuring that they learn more by doing it by doing than they do by following an older dog. And I can't argue with that at all. I will say that the better dogs that I had down through the years, I started with an older dog until they got to the point that they were running and treeing satisfactorily. And then I always felt it was time, you know, to put them in some hunts and let them get socialized and let them learn that game, you know. And that's basically what we're doing with the puppies that we've raised here recently or purchased out of our stud dog. Is, you know, we've been hunting them. They're at the point now where, you know, they're capable, if they keep their mind on their business, to go out there and run a tree of coons on their own. And so we plan to be to run a couple of them this weekend in I believe UKC hunts. I could be wrong. It may be PKC. But at any rate, what we always did with our pups was what just seems natural to do, I guess. When you first get that puppy, socialize it. You know, spend time with it. We're doing the same with this little dachshund puppy right here, and she is just whip smart. I don't know. It seems like these dogs that are bred for companionship just tune right in to what you want really quick. And boy, she is a quick learner. And I'm not going to go into details on that. This is a coon hunting podcast. But just socialize that pup. Spend as much time with that puppy as you possibly can. You know, don't be the guy that just goes out there and puts feed down to a dog once a day and ignores them the rest of the time until they get up old enough, a year old or whatever, and say, okay, it's now time to take you to the woods. And the dog doesn't even know how to lead from the kennel to the truck, doesn't know how to load on a tailgate. You know, doesn't know how to walk through the woods without wrapping the lead around the saplings and bushes, all those sort of things. All of that kind of stuff needs to be done first. Old timers thought, well, you spend too much time with this dog, you'll spoil them and they won't hunt. No. Dogs are smart enough to know when they're released in the woods, if they've got any breeding at all, they're going to, you know, do what nature has provided them for, and that's to go hunting, find something to run, to chase. But what I've always done is I would take a young puppy, 8 weeks old or so, I would go out, take a hot dog and cut it up in little medallions and put it in a plastic bag in my pocket and just walk across the lawn, across the yard or whatever you have there, and toss one of those little pieces of hot dog out in front and just walk that way. And let the pup use his nose to find that. It won't take him long. And toss him, you know, walk a few steps and toss another one on out ahead and walk that way. And little by little, that pup's trailing. That pup is finding those pieces of hot dog, you know. And that's always worked really well for me. Then the next step from that is usually to fashion some kind of a drag, maybe out of a green coon hide. Maybe use training scent to put on an old dry hide. The idea is to have some scent there. And I know Heath Hyatt, again, I'll mention him. He has this method where he puts scent on a mat, and the mat is where he sets the feed bowl, and the dogs get to associate that a reward of food with the scent of an animal. And I think that's a great idea that I have not personally tried, but you might want to try that with your pup. To rewind the tape, you know, you need to be sure that you purchase a pup or produce a pup from your own dogs that's out of strong hunting bloodlines. You know, Sire and Dam need to have the natural God-given ability to work scent, to treat on scent, not just on sight. And I'll stop right there. You know, we don't want to do too much sight work with a pup. We don't want to train the dog to bark or treat only when he can see the game. I think maybe some, not all, some big game dogs nowadays don't want tree unless they can see the game. I always wanted a dog that would locate on scent and tree, strictly on scent without seeing the game. However, there are little things that you can do when the puppy's small to get them to bark up and to look up and to be aware that there's something over their head that they need, that the animals that they're interested in take refuge up above, up in the trees, up the pole or whatever. A lot of nubbin uses a coontail on a fishing rod, and puppies that are, you know, 8 weeks old or whatever, he's got them chasing that coontail and barking up at him as he puts it up, you know, up on a pole or up a tree, a bush or whatever. The late Ed Mead in Michigan used a fishing net, a big dip net with a long handle, the kind that you would use on those Great Lakes up there to catch, you know, northerns, pike and sea trout and bigger fish. And he would take a live raccoon, put it in that net, tie it off with baler twine, and just kind of let that coon walk around on the ground. And the puppies, at first, they're very small, 8 weeks old probably, maybe a little earlier. They would follow along and bay and bark at that, you know. And then because of the fact that you have a long pole there, you could raise that up overhead and lean it up into a tree or bush or whatever and get them looking up and barking up at that. And then later on, as the his regimen went on, he would take the coon out of the net and not have the coon in there at all. The coon scent would be on the net, and he would drag that net along. The puppies would chase it. Because of the long pole again, he could swing it around, and that way he could you know, get the puppies to chase. That would trigger their natural desire to chase. I don't know. Of course, Ed has passed away. His wife, Jeanette, has passed away. But I left a rolling cage with Ed when I left Michigan. And that's another way that you can train a puppy to start, you know, what we commonly call a caged coon. And I use caution with that. You don't want to overdo that at all. Any of these exercises you're using as kind of incentives or triggers to get the puppies to pique their interest. A rolling cage allows the raccoon to actually move the cage, and it triggers that pup's desire to catch. So those work really well. There's a guy named Roger, and I can't think of his last name, out in Nebraska, that was the first one that that sold or marketed these rolling cages. And I can't remember Roger's last name. Help me, folks. But anyway, just those little games like that usually is what we use to kind of get the dog looking for that when we take it out. Again, you know, use the leash, lead it around, put it in the truck, drive it to the grocery store when you go, or to the post office, or to the feed store. Get it used to riding. Some puppies are, you know, get car sick, and the more, you know, they'll get over it, but they get over it by the act of actually riding along. So, tips for you is line your dog box with cardboard and You know, when the pup's in there and he gets sick, just take that cardboard out. I wouldn't advise using your nice dog box pads when you've got a new puppy. Number one, they're going to mess them up. They're going to vomit and slobber all over them. But they, some of them also like to chew. And I've had dogs to chew my pads, and that's not fun. I had one dog I hauled back to Florida from Autumn Oaks for a fella that ate the entire center partition out of my dog box. So, anyway, those are just little things that you learn after all these years in the game. Really, I was looking at Autumn Oaks at these spill-proof water bowls. Those things are the trick now. I didn't used to have that in the old days. So if you put water back there in the dog box for the dog, it was all going to be sloshed out. They're going to turn over the bowl and maybe chew it up or whatever. But these things are really the trick. If you don't have one, if you're not carrying water for your dog, you really need to, especially in warmer weather, but even in the fall, when you're out there hunting at night, get back to the truck, give the dogs a drink. If it's going to be one of those long hikes and a long night in the woods away from the vehicle, carry bottled water. They'll learn to lap it. You can pour it right down or pour it on their tongue, and they'll lap it right up. But dogs need a lot of water. They can go for days without food, but they really need to be watered regularly. Okay, so anyway, once you get that puppy kind of going like that, you know, just interested in game, you know, kind of triggered its prey drive and all, then that's the time that we'd like to take them out. Hopefully you've taken them out in the daytime and let them tromp around through the woods and get over, you know, blowdowns and across little creeks and all that kind of stuff. But got an old pup that we call Boo. Actually, his registered name is Ghost. Named him that because he's a light yellow brindle color. And I had one named that years ago that a farmer in Climax, Michigan named Brad Roof shot and killed my dog for no reason other than it had gotten onto his property across a frozen lake and every chance I get to mention that guy's name, I'm going to mention it publicly because he absolutely wantonly shamelessly killed my dog. But anyway, I named this one Ghost in his memory, and Ghost has been a fun pup. I got him from John Sapier in Spartanburg, South Carolina. John had a plot female named Zena, and we got the fever dog, and he started making a name for himself. John contacted me about breeding, and I was anxious for John to breed his female. I liked her bloodlines a lot, and I guess I can go ahead and say this here. A couple of females that we bred early on showed the Moses Boys poacher dog, Kevin Moses poacher dog, as the sire or up close on the pedigree. And in both instances, when we bred those females to fever, man, we've been really excited about the results. So I'm not going to make this a stud ad or anything at all about it, but those of you who like to study pedigrees, look back there and see. I believe if you get something out of that poacher dog or that bloodline, they're pretty good. And we're relieved to know that they're, crossing well on our dog. But anyway, so I saw this litter of puppies. Now, John has made that cross twice now, so that could kind of give you an indication that he was happy with the first one. And I saw this light brindle pup on there, and John had run, I had posted a video on Facebook and showed the first day that he took this litter of pups down to the creek. He's got a little Swafford Creek there, I think. It's right by his house. And there he lives outside Spartanburg, South Carolina. I can never remember that town. But he showed these puppies first day they ever went to the creek. Man, they just bailed right in that thing and up the creek they went, man, like they were looking. And this one caught my eye. So I asked John if it was available, and he said, yes, he did. That one was available. And so we bought it, and Ella and I drove up and picked it up. And seems like we do a lot of driving to get dogs, but that's what you do when you're retired, I guess. Anyway, we got Ghost, brought him home, brought him in the house, started the same kind of training with him that we're doing with this little dachshund, you know, and he picked it up real quick about the potty training into things. And he did chew up a few things that made him a little less popular with Ella than he could have been. But anyway, back in May, I believe it was, I realized it was now time for Ghost to graduate from the, you know, he treed the squirrels in the yard, and he'd tree a drag, and but it really had none. I did take him out a few times. Went out, I believe, with Gary Langford here, and one night with his female. And then I took a hunt up north, up by Stein Hatchie, and hunted him a couple of nights up there. Man, my buddy up there, I just met this young man, and I should have written his name down right here because I am very embarrassed that I'm not getting his name on this podcast. It may come to me in a minute. But the point being, and I did, I think, take Ghost maybe out with the boys up to Rich Loam, to the wildlife management area. But he had really not been hunted any, except that I had taken him to White River last year when he was not yet 5 months old. And I was pretty impressed with him, actually, because right away he took off with the other dogs. We were in pretty deep water, knee-deep water. And, of course, for a puppy that age, it was over his back. And in some places, he had to swim. And, man, he took that to that like a duck. And so, and we did have we found a coon setting up, walked him that way, and surprisingly, he did. He started tracking that coon on the ground, didn't open on it, but then he started rearing on that tree, and lo and behold, he started tree barking, and the coon was there, and it was seasoned and all that. So we put the coon down, and man, he was super excited about that thing. I held him back. And that's another tip, you know, don't get these puppies in the way where they're going to get hurt by a coon too early. It can set some of them back. And you don't need to get your dog hurt by a coon anyway. That's why you carry a gun. Some guys like to, you know, want to see a fight out of the coon. No, kill the coon humanely. Kill it with one shot if you're good enough. And then after the coon is dead, allow the pup, or the old dog for that matter, to worry the carcass, and that's the reward they get. Word of caution right here, you don't need to do that very often. In fact, the way the dogs are bred today, with kind of imprinted with that treeing instinct, they don't need a lot of coon shot down to them. It, as I've said on this podcast several times, it develops problems that you'll have to deal with later on, like returning to a tree. The rules say if you return to the tree more than once, usually it's return twice to the same tree, you're going to be scratched from the hunt. So you don't want that. It delays the hunt for the other hunters. And so you don't want to do that. But anyway, Ghost, he had shown early on, you know, that he was interested. But I kept him here a while, maybe longer than I should, before I sent him up or took him up to Mark Miller in North Carolina. And I think he backed off a little bit on his tree, but he went into trail mode. He learned to hunt and strike tracks and really run them. And I think, you know, there are two schools of thought. You know, some guys say, well, I want them to show that treeing instinct real early and I want them to tree first. Others will tell you, no, they would rather have a dog to learn to run tracks, trail game, and become track dogs, and then the treeing will come to them. And, you know, I guess I'm going to have to kind of agree with that latter school of thought, that they learn to run a track. Now, they'll run some trash, and Ghost has run some trash, but they then when, you know, he started getting on the coon regularly, that trash, you know, became less and less important, and that's usually what will happen. If you have to deal with trash running, deal with it. And as Heath Hyatt says, you know, just give them that tap, tap, tap with that stimulation on that collar. And, you know, don't overdo it. Don't blow their mind. And you'll probably have that taken care of fairly soon. If you get a hardcore that just does not want to listen, and that's all he wants to do, then you probably need to find a deer hunter or somebody else for that pup. But at, I use the word at any rate. I know a lot, and I'm trying to keep myself from doing that. It's hard to come up with an alternative sometimes. But we sent Ghost up there, and right away he showed his independence. Now, that's something that I really don't have an answer for. I don't know why the dogs of today are so independent, but most of them are. And it kind of gets back to what we talked about, I guess, about training them with an old dog versus training them by themselves. If you train them by themselves, they build confidence. And, you know, and if they tree a coon and you know it's there and it's correct to, with the laws to give them that coon, certainly give them a coon when they're younger. But you don't have to give them every one. And as I said, you know, problems can evolve from that. But I believe that if they learn to hunt and strike and run tracks, I've got a friend, Gary Martin. Well, I don't know if Gary's the one that told me that or not. One of the bear hunters down the coast of North Carolina told me that they start their plot bear dogs on rabbits. They let them run cottontails when they're about 4 months old or so. And that works really well, getting them started and getting them to take tracks and trail. So, although nobody wants that dog that hits a cold track at the beginning of the hunt and stands on its head, you know, while the other dogs are out there busting the 4 points of the compass, tree and coons. So too much cold trailing is not good. If you're a big game hunter, you definitely need cold trailers. But as we found out in hunting in West Virginia, running bear all those years, you want a dog that moves a cold track like a hot track, that takes the scent off the bushes and high, you know, and just keeps casting ahead, as we say, drifting on that track. That's the kind of coal trailer you want. You don't want a dog that's like a brace beagle, you know, that they advertise that won't compete, flat-footed, stand in one place, twist their head all around till they find the track and then turn that way. No, we don't want that in our coon dogs. So anyway, I think probably the sooner you can get them out to start running tracks, finding tracks, running them on their own, the better off you are. And if they're bred right, they're going to tree. And as they're out there, they're going to find some hot tracks or they're going to run up on some coons. And that's usually one thing I've noticed particularly, that the younger the dogs are, the more accurate they tend to be, because they want to have that, you know, that game is right there in front of them. That's why they're treeing. And it excites them. And so they're not as apt to just be anchored down on a little whiff of scent that was made 2 or 3 hours ago. So anyway, just little things again that we learn. But we have to watch for things in our dogs. You know, when they do run a track, are they running it the right way? When they are hunting with other dogs or another dog comes into their tree, are they possessive? Are they thinking more about the other dogs than they are their game? That was one of the things I always did in making rule interpretations and on panels and as a master hounds down through the years, is this thing about, well, you get a question that comes in, this dog was fighting or attempting to fight. And in the situations where there was no actual dog fight, maybe the dog was, one dog was shouldering or maybe growling, maybe face barking another dog. And I've noticed we don't see that much in the hunts anymore, and I think that's because the dogs are so independent. But at any rate, I would always say, well, if the dog has taken his mind off of running, treeing a raccoon and directed all his attention toward the other dogs, either through growling or face barking or bluffing or whatever, then he's guilty of attempting to fight. He needs to keep, as the old saying is, he needs to mind his business. He needs to keep his mind on the task, and that's treeing a coon. And if he's gotten sidetracked like that, then he's apt to have a problem. And so now is the time when you have that young dog, you know, hunt him every once in a while with something else, see how he acts. And if you're seeing these kind of things, deal with it. You know, deal with it. Go in there. Be the alpha. Let him know in no uncertain terms that that's not acceptable behavior. Use whatever moderate means that you use to correct the dog when he needs to be corrected for disciplinary problems. Don't lose your mind. Don't do it when you're angry. But I like to use the term, you know, when you go into the tree, take control of that situation. And if it needs to be dealt with, deal with it. A lot of things you can do with just common sense, you know, tying dogs back at the tree, something you should always do. I'm gonna get on my soapbox here a little bit. When you walk into a tree, I don't care if he's old and gray and he's got nothing but some old brown stained nubs for teeth. Tie the dog at the tree. If he's a young dog, I see so many videos of guys having pups along on the hunt, and you go into the tree and the pups are just wandering around everywhere. That doesn't happen with me. That pup is going to be tied right there fairly close to the tree in a place where he can watch what's going on. But when we're at the tree, all our attention is on the tree. It's not on the ground anymore. It's not on a log. It's not on a creek. It's right there on the tree. Everybody there, the lights are all in the trees. The squallers are going off around the tree. The dogs are all barking excitedly at the tree. Everything happens. The good stuff happens at the tree. That's where the rewards come. Well, this old voice is just about given out for this hour that I've spent with you today. But, you know, training young dogs, especially going into the coon season as we are now, with a young dog that has at least started, he's running his tree, he's going to learn something every night that you take him. And it's important that if you can, to hunt that dog as much as you can. I don't say take a young dog out there and hunt him day from dark to sunrise to the point that he's totally worn out because he's not going to enjoy it if that's the case. You know, I had a son that really enjoyed playing basketball in high school, but it got to the point where it was more of a chore than it was fun. And we don't want that to happen with our dogs. So, and you know, this is something else that Mark Miller up there in North Carolina has taught me, and I may have touched on it recently. These events that UKC has ordained as being the events for which they will award titles and championships, things like water races and field trials. They're not just silly games. They're not just coonhound games, although they were the forerunner of the night hunts. And I don't expect they'll ever take the place of the night hunts unless we get to the point where we absolutely have no place to hunt and have to do everything in a controlled atmosphere or environment. But anyway, these water races and field trials teach dogs to run scent. They teach them, you know, to be competitive, to outrun the other dogs, to be the first at the tree. And if you're using a drag or a cage coon or something like that to excite your pup, what more excitement is there than to be able to run that thing and to be able to swim after that thing and to be able to tree it at the other end, you know? And the dogs love it, and I've said this before, but it really is a good training tool. And it's something that you can enjoy, the family can enjoy for sure. Kids love them. And, you know, put some titles on that dog. We're enjoying that. Particularly, well, this ghost pup, we've already got three titles on him now, and he just turned 14 months old. But it's been stuff that's helped him in the woods. It's helped him to focus on his game. It's, you know, coons are the name of the game. So, all right, that's going to kind of wind it up for this week on Gone to the Dogs. There's so much going on around that I've contacted Tony Daviduk, and Tony won the UKC World Championship, I believe it was in 1990, with Tony's Wild Joey. At Lima, Ohio. And Tony has agreed to come on the podcast. So hopefully next week we'll have Tony. I'm really looking forward to it. A guy I always enjoyed seeing at the events. And he kind of stepped away from coon hunting for several years. But I'm looking forward to that interview. And there'll be more as we go along. It's been what did I say, 204 Gone to the Dogs podcast so far. So as long as this old voice will make it, I'll try to bring you something each month, each week, I mean. Here, I want to thank, always thank Buddy Woodbury, W Hunting Supply. If you go on to the dusupply.com website, you'll see how well it's laid out, how much detail that has been put into that, the products that are there. You know, you can build your own shirt. You go in there and pick the color you want. You pick the design you want. You pick the style you want. And so they get that shirt builder deal. And they have a new thing with a membership that I think is really cool. And I just got mine, and I'm getting into it to see exactly how it's going to work for me. But you go kind of like in a VIP mode. If you do deal with W, for your most guys think of them as their source for electronics like the Garmin, the collars, the handheld, the drive tracks, all those things. And the customer service is superb. And, you know, as if you're a hunter and run more than one dog, or, you know, your equipment is important to you, and quick customer service is important, and knowledge is important, then W Hunting Supply will fulfill those needs for you. I can say that from personal experience. So dusupply.com. I also want to thank my good buddy. It was so good to see him and his wife, Amber, at Autumn Oaks. And that's Mark Zepp, markzepp.com. The Zepp Coon Squalors, the dog boxes, the hunting clothing. All of those things are available from markzepp.com. Okay, folks, I'm going to wind this one up. I'm looking forward to getting out there in the woods. Hope to see some of you at if I don't see you when I'm up in Pennsylvania, I'll see you out in the big oak bottoms of the Arkansas Delta in November. Without further ado, I'll just get out of here. This is Steve Fielder. If you wonder where I am, I'm always gone to the dogs.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the point of galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
New year, new me? Cute. But how about new year, new money? With Experian, you can actually take control of your finances, check your FICO score, find ways to save, and get matched with credit card offers, giving you time to power through those New Year's goals you know you're going to crush. Start the year off right. Download the Experian app. based on FICO score 8 model. Offers and approval not guaranteed. Eligibility requirements and terms apply. Subject to credit check, which may impact your credit scores. Offers not available in all states. See Experian.com for details. Experian.
It's tax season, and at LifeLock, we know you're tired of numbers. But here's a big one you need to hear. Billions. That's the amount of money in refunds the IRS has flagged for possible identity fraud. Now here's another big number. 100 million. That's how many data points LifeLock monitors every second. If your identity is stolen, we'll fix it guaranteed. One last big number. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast for the threats you can't control. Terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.